Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Tuesday, September 16th, and I'm Nat Cardos reporting for KMED. In tonight's news, fire updates on the Dillon, Blue, and Log fires, subdivision issue raises questions on water and sewer requirements, and September is Suicide Prevention Month. So stay tuned, those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyot, Wilcut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection these tribes have to this region.
Updates on the Dillon, Blue, and Log fires. The Dillon fire is currently 11,929 acres and at 78% containment, with 728 personnel on scene. Hot and dry weather continues with temperatures climbing into the mid to upper 90s, per the press release from the Six Rivers National Forest. Humidity is expected to fall around 20%, and some areas will drop into the upper teens. There are no longer evacuation orders in place, though there are evacuation warnings still in place for the fire that can be found on protect.genesis.com. That's protect.genasys.com. Shelter information and evacuation resources are available through the Siskiyou County Office of Emergency Services at 530-340-3539. The Blue Fire is currently at 3,666 acres and at 30% containment. Significant fire growth remains unlikely, though today warming and drying conditions will sustain light fire activity. Containment efforts continue to make steady progress, and suppression repair operations are already underway with little to no new growth anticipated. The Log Fire is currently 1,170 acres and at 71% containment. It continues to hold in the current footprint and does not currently pose as a threat to communities or infrastructure and is unstaffed. The site is monitored by Fire Air Operations. KMA News reached out to the public information officers for the Dillon Fire, as well as the Blue and Log Fires, though none got back to us before broadcast. KMA News will continue to bring updates on fires during this 2025 fire season. A Greater Arcata Area subdivision request may trigger changes to a community's plan's water and sewer service requirements. Daniel Mintz reports.
Questioning whether land use policies in a community plan are still relevant, Humboldt County's Board of Supervisors decided not to take action on a Bayside Area subdivision issue, pending analysis of the area's conditions. Last month, the County Planning Commission denied a request to split a parcel near the Arcata city limit. An appeal of that decision was before supervisors at their September 9th meeting. At issue is the subdivision request's conflict with the county's general plan, which defines 2.5 acres as the area's minimum parcel size. Applicant Larry Henderson seeks to subdivide his family's 4.6-acre parcel into two smaller lots, with one at only 1.4 acres. Presenting the planning department's case, senior planner Cliff Johnson said although parcels surrounding Henderson's property are less than 2.5 acres, they predate the plan and don't set a precedent for new subdivisions. Splitting the parcel would also clash with the Jacoby Creek Community Plan's policies, generally setting 5 acres as minimum parcel size unless public water and sewer services are available.
It should be noted that there were specific findings in the Jacoby Creek Community Plan that were made when these policies were adopted that specified that the neighborhood, this community had essentially reached its maximum capacity due to concerns, including on-site water and septic, and there was a history of water contamination in the area, and part of that played into the justification for setting those higher density standards.
But Henderson told supervisors the policies are outdated, and requiring public utility hookups is a mandate that can't be complied with, as the city of Arcata won't extend services to the area.
First, we are not to blame for you having to deal with this today. We are the victims here, not the county. Second, we would not be here if that outdated Jacoby Creek plan policies requiring public services were updated when your board directed that they be updated back in 2020. We are not responsible for fixing the county's problems with a catch-22 plan policy that is outdated, impractical, and untenable.
Responding to that issue, Planning Director John Ford said a comprehensive study on groundwater and septic capacity is needed to confirm that changes to the plan can be made without impacts.
It's an important point to recognize that there are policies that allow placement of a well, placement of a wastewater treatment system on a parcel. But we're looking at a bigger issue, which is, should the parcel be created with the resource constraints that exist? And that's where the larger study would really need to be done to make sure that there is no groundwater pollution going on currently, and that the existing area can support additional parcel creation using septic systems for wastewater disposal and also using private wells.
Supervisor Mike Wilson said he's concerned about setting a precedent of creating smaller lots in the area. Other supervisors highlighted the community plan's lack of updating despite a board directive 5 years ago. Supervisors decided to hold off on decision-making and continue the hearing to an uncertain date to allow planning staff to assess the area's conditions. Supervisor Steve Madrone's proposal to test wells in the area wasn't taken up, and since funding will be needed regardless, Ford will eventually return to present a budget for analyzing the complex situation. A vote to that effect was unanimous. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Humboldt County has a suicide rate that is more than twice the California average, and this month, the county's Department of Health and Human Services is partnering with community groups to bring attention to suicide prevention efforts. KMUD's Sigurd Bjorn has been learning more about the issue and brings us this report. Content warning. This story contains content regarding suicide and may be triggering to some listeners. Listener discretion is advised.
September is Suicide Awareness Month, and in Humboldt County this year, the month is dedicated to recognizing the warning signs for suicide, encouraging open conversation about mental health, and connecting people to treatment and resources. To learn more about what the warning signs may be, and what resources and treatments are available, we spoke to Amy Terones, coordinator at the Family Resource Center at Soham Health in Garberville.
Everybody experiences depression and mental health concerns and issues differently. There have been historically some signs that people want to look out for, but honestly, I do think that everybody does do it differently. And I don't want to pigeonhole or put into a box certain signs that somebody might be looking for. And then they might miss other signs, or maybe that person isn't exhibiting anything that we talk about today. I just want to make sure that we're really clear. There is no rhyme or reason when somebody chooses to take their own life and what the lead up might be to that. Every experience is very unique and individual. I think the most important thing that we can do when we are concerned about a friend, loved one, family member that might be experiencing suicidal ideation is to continuously build our relationship with them and do that out of a very open and authentic way, reduce judgment as much as possible, and really just listen and try to be an ally with somebody. That would look really different depending on the situation. You know, some people want to talk and they want someone to listen and talk back and have full lively discussions. Maybe those discussions are a little bit dark. Maybe they're, you know, a big picture. Like, what is our purpose here? Why are we here? I just don't want to do this anymore. You know, language like that. Other people might be really quiet and introverted, and maybe they just want somebody to sit with them quietly and not have big conversations like that. So everybody's really different. And like I say, I think the most important thing that we can do is really build a non-judgmental relationship with them and continually just be emotionally and physically present. That is very difficult. It's easier said than done. It's really, really hard sometimes to sit by a loved one or a friend, a coworker, family, community member, and recognize that you have no control over their actions. So maybe it's a loved one who is suicidal
Maybe they have ideation, but they haven't done any type of attempt, and you're trying to figure out, you know, how to cope with the lack of control. You know, I think that's one of the hardest things for family members or loved ones is, you know, we might not be experiencing the same type of suicidal ideation or depression that person is experiencing. So it's hard for us to understand. And you can, you know, talk about it all day. You can express your love and what that person might mean to them and offer a bunch of resources and give them numbers. But ultimately, I just want to make sure, you know, we as the support person recognizes that we don't have the control or the power over what other people do. And it's not our fault if something happens to a friend of ours. And oftentimes we may think that we didn't say the right thing or maybe we said the wrong thing or all those, you know, all those questions that we might have and the guilt that we might have. And again, me just saying this isn't going to eliminate that for you, but I just want to recognize how hard it is sometimes to be the witness.
Support for individuals experiencing mental health issues and those in their lives has increased, both locally and nationwide. There are social media accounts dedicated to the issues, crisis lines, and national awareness campaigns. 988 is a nationwide suicide crisis lifeline which anybody can call. A call or a text to 988 will be answered by someone who is trained to assist, and much like a call to 911, there is no automation or AI involved. The call doesn't have to be about anything specific, just someone to talk to, someone to listen. The call is confidential.
We also have services through the county. We have a mental health crisis line in our county, which is the 707-445-7715. And again, that's somebody up in Eureka at our Sempervirens office. And that is a live human that is going to answer that phone 24/7. Here in Southern Humboldt, we do have both at Redwood Rural Health Center and at the Southern Humboldt Community Healthcare District, we do have licensed clinical social workers that can do one-on-one therapeutic intervention with folks. And also very excited to tell you that at the Miranda campus for South Fork High School and Miranda Junior High, there is a wellness center now on campus. There is staff there during the school day. They are very supportive, very helpful. If you have a child or a student that is in need, you know, let's say they don't want to talk to you as a mom or a dad, you can always just encourage them to go check in with the folks at the wellness center. Or you yourself could go over or call the wellness center folks through the South Fork High School and get some support as well.
Several other schools in the area have similar wellness centers, including Redway Elementary, Sunnybrae and Pacific Union in Arcata, Barnum High and Sane Middle School in Eureka, KTJUSD in Hoopah, and Blue Lake Elementary. In-person, virtual, and phone support is available to all who seek it through organizations such as NAMI, whose website, nami-humboldt.org, offers a comprehensive list of resources. But your first call could be to the Humboldt County Crisis Line at 707-445-7715 or to the nationwide 988. I'm Sigurd Bjørn, reporting for KMUD.
In state news, curricula aims to help California debunk false media claims, Public News Service's Suzanne Potter reports.
In an age rife with misinformation and disinformation, one nonpartisan nonprofit that started at Stanford University offers a free curriculum to help schools arm students with the tools to evaluate internet claims. The digital inquiry group, called DIG, helps teachers integrate critical thinking skills into many subjects. Stanford professor Sam Weinberg co-founded DIG and says the curriculum has been downloaded 16 million times so far.
The most important thing is to recognize that we can't look at a particular post and assume that we can just look at it and know who's behind it and what their interests are. All information comes from a source, and to evaluate the quality of information, we have to take into account who produced it and why.
DIG teaches a technique called lateral reading, where you leave a site, find out what others are saying about it, make a judgment about its credibility, and then decide if it is worth your attention. California passed a law in 2023 to require media literacy training to be integrated into multiple subjects in K-12 instruction, including history, social studies, English, math, and science. Weinberg says DIG's offerings are listed as recommended curricula in 42 states, but the Trump administration recently slashed support.
We have funding from the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation and Google.org, and we were funded up until DOGE and Elon Musk by the Department of Education. We had a $2.7 million project to spread this material, but then we had $1 million of funding cut.
False claims often race across the internet, but far fewer people hear about it when the material is debunked. Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Legislator passes bill to protect college students from anti-Semitism. ACLU and teachers union call it infringes on academic freedom. KPFA's Anthony Perazzo reports.
On a 35-0 vote, the state Senate passed Assembly Bill 715, sending it to the desk of Gavin Newsom. The vote came late Friday, the last day of the legislative session. Proponents say the bill will reduce anti-Semitism in California's classrooms by creating a new statewide Office of Civil Rights, headed by an anti-Semitism prevention coordinator. That coordinator would track and report anti-Semitism in schools, working with school districts and members of school communities. The coordinator would serve with four other new positions in accompanying legislation, Senate Bill 48. There would be coordinators to prevent religious discrimination, race and ethnicity discrimination, gender discrimination, and LGBTQ discrimination. Senator Scott Weiner is a Democrat from San Francisco.
AB 715 builds on California's work to combat hate by acknowledging that Jewish students are facing an acute problem. They're not the only students facing challenges, but we know that this is a problem. And the bill also, particularly with its companion bill, helps to fight discrimination against all communities.
Senator Jesse Aragon spoke in support of the measure.
This, unfortunately, is happening throughout the state of California. And this makes Jewish students afraid to come to school. Our state laws say that students should not be afraid to come to school and that discrimination on the basis of religion, the basis of race, gender, identity, is prohibited in California law. What this bill does is build on our existing law by doing several things. One, in making it clear that curriculum and materials can't be discriminatory in nature, creating this Office of Civil Rights and having an anti-Semitism coordinator to make sure that we are educating schools about issues around anti-Semitism.
The bill's opponents include the ACLU, California Action, education unions, and other social justice organizations. They say the bill could infringe on academic freedoms. Senator Lola Smallwood Cuevas is a Democrat from Los Angeles.
As we are trying to make sure that we are protecting, we are also infringing on academic freedom that may have teachers feeling that they are so surveilled that they will not be able to adequately engage the kind of discourse that we know our children need. The notion of anonymous complaints, you know, there risks some real censorship potential in these conversations, and courts have warned that there could be a chilling effect in terms of First Amendment rights. I think this bill does elevate the issues of discrimination, and I'm very proud of that. I also think in the way that it's implemented, we're starting to create some competition around who is getting protected and who isn't.
The California chapter of the Council on American-Islamic Relations released a press statement to express its disappointment with AB 715's passage. It's urging Governor Gavin Newsom to veto the bill. Earlier versions of the bill included references to Islamophobia, which were struck out before the measure was passed. For KPFA News, I'm Anthony Perazzo.
In national news, UN officials accuse Israel of intentionally killing journalists in Gaza. KPFA's Christina Onnestead reports.
Irene Khan, the United Nations Special Rapporteur on the Rights to Freedom of Opinion and Expression, says Israel has a strategy it uses to carry out assassinations of journalists in Gaza.
They will first delegitimize and discredit a journalist. Smear campaigns are started accusing the journalists of being terrorist supporters or terrorists themselves, and then they are killed. So it is not just killing journalists, but killing. The attempt is being very clearly made here to kill the story.
Citing UN data, Khan says at least 252 Palestinian journalists have been killed in Gaza since the war was triggered by Hamas's massacre in southern Israel on October 7th, 2023. That's more journalists killed than in both world wars, Vietnam War, the wars in Yugoslavia, and the war in Afghanistan combined, she said. She says Israel's an outlier in its attacks on journalists during wartime.
What is happening in Gaza is extremely unusual in that I cannot recall another situation where a member state of the United Nations has denied access to independent international media for a conflict, for atrocities, for the unfolding of genocide, and now genocide actually happening over almost 3 years.
Last month, Israel admitted it targeted an Al Jazeera journalist when it bombed a tent, killing five media workers, saying Anas al-Sharif had posted a photo of a selfie with Hamas leadership after the October 7th attack. Two international journalist advocacy groups, the Committee to Protect Journalists and Reporters Without Borders, condemned the assassination and the use of a selfie to justify it. Reporters Without Borders dismissed the selfie as proof of ties to Hamas's October 7th attack. Amnesty International called the killing a war crime. I'm Christina Onnestead, reporting for Pacifica Radio, KPFA.
In National Native News, Brian Bull reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. Bureau of Indian Affairs offices in Wisconsin and Minnesota remain open after the Department of Government Efficiency targeted them for termination. As Danielle Kading reports, the initiative, formerly led by billionaire Elon Musk, had proposed canceling leases for several offices earlier this year.
The cancellations affected offices in Ashland and Shawnee in Wisconsin and Bemidji in Minnesota. Wisconsin tribes say the Bureau of Indian Affairs office in Ashland is a critical regional hub that processes land trust applications and provides education assistance and law enforcement support. Robert Blanchard is chair of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. He says closing the office would have been a hardship for the tribe.
We would have probably had to go to maybe Minneapolis or some other place further away from us to get services.
Bill Broidrick represents the owner of the Ashland office. He says Wisconsin tribes adopted a resolution in opposition to its closure.
On that basis, the decision was made by the Bureau of Indian Affairs to keep the office open.
The Bureau of Indian Affairs says all three offices remain open. The agency says it's working to ensure adequate space continues to be available to support delivery of services to tribes. For National Native News, I'm Danielle Kading.
While summer is winding down, powwow season is now a year-long observation thanks to venues held indoors or in warmer climes like the Southwest. But you can still get a chilly reception if you don't mind your manners. Buffalo's Fire recently talked to several natives at the 55th United Tribes Technical College powwow and asked them what their number one rule for good etiquette was.
One of the main things I'd say not to do at a powwow is put your chairs down where the drums are supposed to be. Gotta think about all the singers, and the singers have wives and they got kids and whatnot. A lot of folks try to fight for space and yet they don't even sit there the whole weekend.
My rule is to pick up after yourself wherever you're sitting. Make sure the trash gets in the garbage can.
People should know is not to take pictures of you without your permission. Always ask where you're from, your name, what tribe you're from, where you're from, if it's okay if take pictures of them.
Don't block the elders. Let them through if they're getting to their chairs. Don't stand in front of them when they're trying to watch the powwow.
No picture taking unless you're buying.
because they usually send it back overseas and they copy our work and then they send it back over here. They sell it for cheap. Like they say it's native made, but they're not native made.
My rule is to be good and help look out for the vendors. A lot of the times that they sit here and they have to spend a lot of their day, they don't get the chance to get up, to go get drinks, to go get food. So outside of just being kind and smiling and, you know, see if you have the opportunity to offer a hand and help them out, you know, do so. Help them, you know, see if they had water, see if they got something to eat and stuff like that. Just be good to them.
That was Dion Crazy Bull, Gabby Rave, Easton Wolf, Richard Gillette, Leroy Henry, and Gia MacArthur. All natives sharing their powwows, do's, and don'ts as part of Buffalo Fire's coverage of the UTTC International Powwow held earlier this month. And on this day in 1893, following a pistol shot, more than 100,000 settlers raced onto the Cherokee Strip of Oklahoma, land once inhabited by Native Americans. It was the largest land run in history for territory once considered too arid for farmers and relegated to displaced Native people. But settlers pressured President Benjamin Harrison to open up the area to non-natives, who hurried to stake their claim. September 16th is also Trail of Tears Commemoration Day for the thousands of Cherokees forced to leave their homes during President Andrew Jackson's term. This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Katie Phillips, and thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Sigurd Bjorn, Suzanne Potter, Anthony Perazzo, Christina Onnestad, and Brian Bull. KMUD News is online, and you can find us on kmud.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Are you passionate about your community? Looking to report on what's happening around Mendocino? KMUD News is looking for stringer reporters from the Mendocino area to cover local Mendocino stories that matter. Whether you're a seasoned journalist or just eager to learn, we'll help you get started. You'll get training, support, and a chance to amplify real voices from your community. If you're interested, email news@kmud.org for more information. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Nat Cardos.